Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network presents the Roundtable Report, a discussion of today's issues. So the kid gloves are off as we listen to real answers from real people. Come and join us on the Roundtable Report.
And good evening. I'm John Jeffers, your host, founder, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network. It's time for the Roundtable Report. It's Wednesday, 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time. First things first, I want to go out for our wishes for a quick recovery. Help to Mike Norris at home recovering from surgery. And he's got to do some rehab, which is sadistic torture, and he'll soon find that out on his own. So, Mike, if you're listening, we at the Contra Radio Network wish you a speedy recovery. And let's see. Oh, my listeners. I don't know what's happening. Maybe people are starting to get really antsy about the end of the world as we know it. I wanted to share this with you because I'm really excited about it, and I want to thank you, the listeners, because the only way this happens is because of you, not me. As of today, the last 30 days, we have had 14,410 listeners in the last 30 days. Yes, you heard me right, 14,410. We have had 107,987 downloads of the show. So, I want to say thank you. I'm very humbled, believe me, when I tell you that. But I'm not too humble to ask you this. If you could spare a dollar or two a month, just a dollar or two a month, help support the show, I'd really appreciate it. Go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com. Patreon.com/Contra Radio. If you could spare a dollar or two a month, that'd be really helpful. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. One of the things I want to talk about is this. You know, we run across people all the time when they find out we're preppers and we hear all the crap they say. But let's just think about this. I found this great little article at the survivalistblog.net. It's called, "Is the End of the World as We Know It Really That Far-Fetched?" by M. Edwards on October 21st of this year, 2016, the year of our Lord. He says, "I struggled with submitting this article because it is not the typical how-to one might usually find here. Even so, the content is something I'm not seeing elsewhere, and I think it needs to be shared." And I agree with him. That's why we're talking about his article on the Contra Radio Network. You know, we all know that people who think we preppers are nuts. They must think we're preparing for an alien invasion or something equally absurd because they can't comprehend the end of the world as we know it ever happening. An EMP caused by a solar flare or terrorist weapon which fries all electronics? Simply not going to happen. A foreign invading army? Nope. Another decade-long Great Depression caused by economic collapse? Not a chance. Civil War? Ha! Laugh out loud. Whatever you throw at the naysayers, they will quickly shoot it down as being totally out of the realm of possibility. We can't change their thinking, so we usually have them be, or we usually let them be and go about our business. However, I hope something in the article is found to be enlightening to those kinds of people. All right? Even among preppers, there are those who think that the end of the world as we know it is a remote possibility, which they hope will probably never happen. So they are preparing for more personal scenarios. By that, I mean they're preparing for a day when they suddenly lose their job, suffer through a short-term natural disaster, or some other relatively minor event, which is limited to their own household, country, or city. For them, that is a personal end of the world as we know it, for their world will be turned upside down for a short while. They believe having a 3 to 6 month supply of food in the pantry is enough, and they become content with that level of readiness. Now, in my experience, it seems very few are planning for long-term events, years, which impact the entire state, time zone, or country. I would like to challenge that line of thinking, because the possibility of the end of the world as we know it happening are much greater than some would care to admit. It has been said, there are two kinds of people, those who divide people into neat little groups and those who do not. That was a bit of a lame humor, but seriously, for the intensive purpose of this article, there are two kinds of people, those who hope the end of the world does not happen, and those who actually want it to happen. Of course, a good many who read this will recoil at that statement and respond, why would anyone desire that? And everybody that goes along with it, including martial law, detention camps, starvation, mass slaughter, etc. You would be right to ask this challenging question, of course, but the answers might surprise you. Sadly, I believe there are many in government today who are actively working hard to bring about the end of the world as we know it in our society. It's not because of sadism or, taking pleasure and the misery of others, but rather because they don't like the present state of the union or the direction this country is currently heading. They want to change the very core of our country and take it in a totally new direction from where we have been. Needless to say, their vision for America is not what the founding fathers had in mind. Now, for various reasons, we won't go into it here. I believe our president is one of those people, and he's in good company with many other politicians in all three branches of government. Just before being elected, he said we were going to fundamentally change this country. Yes, he wants this country to get a total makeover. Change in any aspect of the entire country is an incredibly slow process, especially when trying to change the very foundations upon which the nation has been built. So how is the former community organizer going about doing it? Those who are familiar with the Alinsky Rules for Radicals might recall a quote from page 116. The first step in community organization is community disorganization. The disruption of the present organization is the first step toward community organization. Present arrangements must be disorganized if they are to be displaced by new patterns. All change means disorganization of the old and organization of the new. In other words, to bring about drastic changes rapidly, one must first create chaos and then bring about new solutions to rebuild that which has been destroyed. Using an analogy to demonstrate this, how this tactics works, suppose I don't like my carpet, but I can't justify replacing it because it's in good condition and my wife loves it. One day, a leak develops in my roof, which allows rain to seep into the house and onto the carpet. Being careful not to let a crisis go to waste, I ignore it while hoping the leak will eventually ruin my carpet so I can justify replacing it. However, my wife soon notices the leak and starts nagging me to fix the roof. I procrastinate as long as possible before finally trying a few minor fixes, which I know won't work and they don't like. So I let the situation continue until the carpet is moldy and my wife demands I replace it. I then fork out a huge sum of money for all the repairs. My wife complains that I should have listened to her when we could have saved so much money. If only I had fixed the problem sooner. She's right, of course, but she wasn't aware of my strategy from the beginning, and that is why I continue to let her complain. Her complaints go in one ear and out the other. Now, honestly, she would have to have a fit if she knew about my strategy, so I kept that part a secret from her. In the end, I got my new carpet. She likes it better than the moldy carpet we had, and she'll get over being mad soon enough. Now, the above analogy is basically how Obama gets things done. So pay close attention and watch the news, and you'll see this concept is in play virtually everywhere. Fast and Furious, for example, is a DOJ program which purposefully overlooked straw purchases of American firearms by cartel members who should not have been able to acquire them. In other words, our existing laws should not have stopped them at the sales counter, but government agents chose not to enforce those laws. They knew the straw buyers were going to take the weapons back to Mexico and allow them to do it despite the fact it was against numerous laws. Now, we had no plan to track those weapons except by documenting them when later found at Mexican crime scenes, which undoubtedly include the murder of innocents. The U.S. would eventually be able to point the finger at the situation and justify passing more restrictive gun control laws. Infringing upon the Second Amendment was their goal all along, but they couldn't justify doing it. Create enough chaos, however, and the justification will appear as if by magic. Sometimes the chaos is unplanned, but it can also serve as justification to advance the progressive end agenda. For example, mass shootings are always, and I mean always, used to justify the demand for tighter gun control laws. Note, they are willing to be complicit in the murder of innocents or dance on the graves of victims in order to have the opportunity to reshape this country according to how they think it should be. Interestingly, Rules for Radicals also teaches the end justifies the means. So using these tactics to replace or to reshape this country is perfectly justified in the minds of the Alinsky admirers. Keep in mind, Obama used to teach Rules for Radicals to others, and Hillary is no stranger to the works of Alinsky either. I don't think they're too concerned about the end of the world and everything that comes with it because, one, it would create chaos and allow them to reshape this country according to how they think and you know, how it should be. And two, they are powerful and protected enough to escape the pain which has brought about their changes. It should be no surprise this kind of government would be willing to cause the end of the world in order to accomplish their goals if they felt it was necessary to do so. However, they really want controlled chaos and for that, and for the end of the world to happen on a number of small scales. For example, specific times and places so as to be better manage the transition and outcome. I believe the day may come soon when they can't control the chaos they have created in various places, and that combination of circumstances may very well bring about the end of the world for everyone all at once. Now, one could easily write off as conspiracy theory, except for the fact that the pattern keeps showing up elsewhere. Obamacare, for example. Some think Obamacare was passed in order to improve our national health care issues. But remember, the Alinsky model calls for disorganization followed by reorganization. Now, with that in mind, I believe Obamacare is actually the instrument of destruction which was designed and passed into law by progressives to create more chaos in our existing healthcare system. Is it any surprise what followed was a billion-dollar Obamacare website that didn't work, doctors leaving the system in droves, premiums skyrocketing, old insurance plans being canceled, medical services no longer being covered, employers eliminating full-time jobs in order to avoid offering coverage, a mandate for all citizens to have health insurance, discussions of government bailouts for health insurance companies, etc. Of course, Obamacare won't work effectively because it was never intended to improve anything. It is merely a tool which causes further damage to the system in order to pave the way for an even more progressive solution in the future. Now, those who thought Obamacare was a bad idea, you know, were routinely ignored. Remember all the town halls, huh? So while the law was passed, despite the majority of citizens opposing it, those who don't like Obamacare today are really going to hate health care reform part two tomorrow because it's coming. So the citizens, by and large, are not aware of this is how government is behaving today. All they see are chaotic situations which government either creates through bad policy or is unwilling or unable to fix it, and it frustrates them terribly. They protest in anger but are routinely ignored, just as I ignored my wife in the leaking roof analogy. However, citizens might think differently if they understood the chaos as part of the overall plan. For example, we all know how the border is insecure and we protest to bring the matter to the attention of our leaders. But the power brokers, that is the governing elite in this country, ignore them because they don't want to fix it right now. They won't openly admit it, but I believe they want terrorists and illegals to infiltrate our country to the point the system breaks so they will be able to implement immigration reforms. That's how the Alinsky tactic works. But to speed up the process, they decline to enforce current immigration laws while also talking about granting amnesty for those who are already here. As a result, earlier this year, Mexicans started hopping on moving freight trains and coming over by the thousands, aka death trains, because of the dangers involved. Now, their kids are now enrolled in public schools all over America, and we're finding we do not have enough money, classrooms, or teachers to accommodate everyone. It's all going exactly to plan, and immigration reform will soon become the crisis of the moment, which absolutely must be addressed with the utmost urgency. Now, the media is largely playing along with the lying government officials throughout the whole process. They don't expose truth behind government dealings, but rather help conceal it to make favorite politicians look good. They are on board with the advancement of the liberal agenda, and if we listen to them, then we can be assured our borders is secure. Obamacare is working wonderfully, and Ebola is nothing to worry about in this country. Excuse me. A good number of people are not interested in hearing the truth, but only that the news is presented to them in a biased way, which matches their viewpoint. Thankfully, a good number of people aren't so easily fooled. Despite what the government is saying about America being safe from Ebola, majority of Americans want to ban flights from Ebola-infected countries. However, government is hesitating to do so. I don't know their motives, but it's clear the same tactics are being applied in that situation too. They want chaos to come here because that is how they implement drastic change in this country. There are many things about our economy and government functions which are chaotic and unsustainable, which makes me wonder just how far and wide the applications of these tactics really go. Maintaining high levels of debt and deficit without having a budget, cranking up the currency printing machine while having an economy which is largely dependent on credit purchases, and having more government benefit recipients than there are taxpayers. I could list a few dozen other examples of why we should all be concerned, but others. But others have written much about them already, and they all point to the same inevitable shit hits the fan outcome. The thing is, our country can deal with singular breakdowns like the burst of the housing bubble a few years back, just so long as everything doesn't collapse at once. The progressive agenda will keep advancing until that total loss of control happens. Logically speaking, freedom lovers who desire a restoration of this country should be hoping everything collapses at once. So I've identified two very different groups who are or should be hoping for the end of the world as we know it, although they do so in different ways and for different reasons. One group feels immune to the fallout, which comes with the end of the world as we know it, while the other group will most likely be the primary targets of a government which is trying to change our way of life during the critical incident. Where the two groups clash, there will undoubtedly be a civil war. As awful as that would be for individuals, there is a silver lining within it. First, although being very difficult to endure, the end of the world as we know it is exactly what this country needs to change direction towards restoration. Serious events such as Katrina and 9/11 were not enough, for it will have to take something of much greater magnitude to put us on that path. Some will claim they are already on that path and working hard to move this country in the direction of restoration. But no elections and protests are not going to do it. The end of the world as we know it is truly our only hope if we want to return to the visions our founding fathers had in mind for this country. Second, the attitude of the citizens prevents restoration given the fact we are so extremely and bitterly divided in this country. If government doesn't manage to cause the end of the world as we know it, which then leads to a civil war, then civil war, which will eventually lead to the end of the world as we know it, will be sparked by the hatred which exists between citizens and our society. A recent example of our hatred involved participants in the Moms Demand Action gun control group who openly voiced their desire to see licensed firearm carriers killed for exercising their Second Amendment rights in public. Some of them were even encouraging the idea of calling the police to report a man with a gun in the hope the police would show up with guns blazing. The source of that, BearingArms.com/MomsDemandSupportersHopeExecutions, open carriers. That is how much they hate their fellow citizens who have a different opinion when it comes to the constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Since there are no peacemakers capable of making peace between the left and the right, it's only a matter of time before that level of hatred, bitterness, and anger sparks a civil war in this country, and that will consequently cause the end of the world as we know it. Another benefit which can be gained through the end of the world as we know it is that people undergo a situation which causes them to rethink their attitudes and priorities. Keep in mind, many of the social problems which exist in our country today are not found in many third world countries which have much lower standards. Now, I believe we developed our particular set of cultural issues because of the fact that we enjoyed so much progress, we have higher standards, and life is actually pretty good here. Most of our poorest citizens live better than the kings of the Middle Ages. For example, most Americans don't know what it's like to breathe the polluted air in Beijing or New Delhi, but the smog-tainted air of Los Angeles is fairly clean by comparison. As a result of always having fresh air, some people have developed a heightened sensitivity to offensive odors. Their intolerance goes beyond cigarette smoke to include factories, breweries, livestock, farms, slaughterhouses, canneries, and other odor-producing facilities. Never mind the useful products, jobs, and economic benefits which are generated by these facilities. The hypersensitive work very hard to ban the odors as a public nuisance. They would rather the business shut down or relocate than tolerate offensive smells in the neighborhood. For example, Hot Sauce Factory in Irwindale, California. Such a thing doesn't happen in China or India, for they simply go about their business without giving much thought to their nostrils. Now, our grocery stores are always well-stocked, and we have the ability to choose what kinds of food we consume. Some people have chosen to avoid animal products entirely, and the extreme practitioners have formed groups such as PETA to protest the murder of animals as a food source. Other health-conscious people complain about obesity and how our food is too high in salt, sugar, fat, cholesterol, etc. You won't hear such complaints in starving countries, for they eat whatever they can get their hands on and be thankful for it. However, here in America, our solution is to impose bans and restrictions of all kinds. Never mind countless high school students are now skipping lunch entirely, and cafeterias are operating in the red while throwing out more food than ever. Politicians take pride in forcing schools to provide a healthy lunch. Now, in countries where civil war is happening, it is not uncommon to see people carrying firearms in public, even full automatic rifles. They do so not only because they can, but because survival depends on it. This isn't necessarily true in America, as most citizens would say it's a relatively safe country. Most citizens today live out their entire life without ever owning a firearm. Some of them are saying America is so safe, we no longer have a need for firearms, especially the scary-looking ones. Of course, they are working very hard to ban them entirely, despite it being a right secured by the U.S. Constitution. They are truly no longer Americans in spirit, given the fact they have total contempt for our fundamental document, which outlines how we are all going to live in this country. The rights secured by the document used to be our common sense, knowledge, which is common to all. But now we each have a different definition of what common sense means, and people who can no longer admit they are wrong argue about who is right. Now, I'm only citing three examples, but if I can say so delicately, we've become a nation of ban-happy pansies. The general attitude of America has seemingly changed from, I don't like X, but others do, so let X be for their sake, to, I don't like X, and those who do like X should not like it either, so we must ban X entirely. Sadly, their efforts are working. Freedom lovers are now losing more of their rights and privileges every day, even the things they simply enjoy doing, watching, or consuming for personal pleasure. There is no hope of reversing this trend. We have become so spoiled in this country that many citizens can choose to behave like divas at the expense of everyone else. Knocking them off their high horse and bringing them back to reality will require nothing less than a full end of the world as we know it situation. Divas would quickly get over themselves if America suddenly became like a third world country. Again, I am not minimizing how difficult the end of the world and or civil war would be to endure, but I am saying it would bring some unexpected and welcome restorative changes in our country. With so many bigger things to worry about, people would have a greater tolerance for the little things. Political correctness would no longer exist. There is nothing which can restore appreciation for freedom, all kinds of freedom, as living through martial law. People would regain the respect and appreciation for a firearm as a useful and a desirable thing to have. When government is seen to be the tyrant that it really is, then fewer people will rise up in defense of it. So a certain measure of truth, real truth, will once again be important to consumers of news. It is inevitable, but it doesn't have to happen. It is inevitable, but if it doesn't happen soon, then my children and grandchildren will be left to deal with it. So I'd much rather be the one to endure the hardship now so they might enjoy greater freedoms and peace in future years. It would be incredibly difficult to endure, but better it be me right now, given I am prepared for it. To briefly summarize, there are some people who are working hard to create the very chaos which may bring about the end of the world as we know it. They are like a juggler, an expert, expertly tossing a dozen balls in the air, creating an incredible display which is both seemingly chaotic yet tightly controlled. But it only takes one momentary loss of control for everything to come falling down at once. That could very well be how the government creates the end of the world as we know it. Meanwhile, the citizens are so bitterly divided and angry, they may one day spark the end of the world themselves. It almost started at Bundy Ranch, Nevada last spring. Again, during the summer in Ferguson, Missouri, and other opportunities for it to happen currently exist in states where firearm confiscation is being implemented or considered right now, such as California, Connecticut. One way or another, the end of the world is bound to happen. In conclusion, my purpose in sharing these words are to encourage others to, one, be mindful of how government operates by using the chaos to implement change. Two, avoid wasting time, money, and energy protesting chaos, social issues, political problems, as you'll only be ignored. Three, form your own conclusions and follow your intuition, regardless of what major news outlets are reporting. And four, know civil war and the end of the world as we know it are inevitable. And five, plan for a long-term crisis. Be prepared. Well, what do you think? I'm just curious. Was he right? Well, if you want to know, it's on the CRN Facebook page. That's right. If you want to call in and opine, our number is 516-453-9389. 516-453-9389. Terry cannot be here tonight. He's got family matters to attend in far-flung Missouri. But I'm sure he's listening in, but he can't not participate tonight. what do we got going on? Something I wanted to say, and I forgot it. Oh, well. If it was important, I remembered it, right? In the meantime, shit hits the fan. Shithitsthefanplan.com. This is interesting, and I want you to – I've already gotten a couple of emails from some listeners, especially some new listeners. I want to thank the new listeners who showed up on Facebook. They sent me some messages about it. Both of them concerned about rioting and whether a vote for Trump is Civil War or a vote for Hillary is World War III. All right. And for those of you that are watching the World Series, the Chicago Cubs are up 5-0. Bottom of the fifth. Yes, game two. That reminds me, Average Joe got a new episode in. Let's take a listen to it. Be back in about 5 minutes.
Stand by for another message from Average Joe.
Hey folks, Average Joe here. Getting ready to start another series. This will be a four-part series titled Winter Wonderland Gone Bad. So as a large majority of the United States is preparing for winter to come, I want to go over a few things that most preppers already are prepared for, but some of our newer listeners, this will be a good start for you to make sure that you're prepared for the winter, and hopefully some of our more experienced preppers, this will just help refresh your memory on what your preps are for a winter disaster. Some questions that come to mind that you need to be thinking about: are you truly prepared for wintertime emergencies? What if you have to bug out in the winter? Will you be properly equipped? Have you considered winter weather during a disaster? Have you thought about clothing, sleeping gear, keeping items from freezing, such as your water, your food? Have you thought about weapons malfunctions? How about your vehicles? Are they going to want to start when it's cold out? Wintertime creates a plethora of problems for logistics, as well as physical limitations and injuries that can be caused by those cold conditions that we all need to take into consideration. Are you prepared to stay warm enough to prevent hypothermia and frostbite? Do you have the proper clothing, sleeping gear, heat sources? Do you have a shelter already established? How about your vehicles? Is your vehicle ready to go in the cold weather? Are you going to have any problems starting it? Are you going to have battery issues? Are you going to have fuel issues? You need to be keeping all of that in mind. Do you have a bug out cabin or a bunker already established? If not, my suggestion is that you start considering different locations for the winter. You're not going to want to be popping up a tent out in the middle of the snow or even building an earthen shelter. It's going to be nearly impossible to keep those shelters warm enough in freezing cold temperatures. You may be able to come up with some fancy little tricks that can keep you warm, but you're not going to be comfortable. So if you haven't already come up with a bug out location that is an established structure, you probably ought to start doing that now. So even the most experienced preppers with all the preps in the world may still not have everything that they need in order to survive. What if your preps get destroyed, damaged, looted? What if your bug out location gets overrun, and you have no choice but to leave your bug out location and all of your preps? So if something happens, and you're having to bug out and fight off whoever, you need to make sure that you're properly geared up. You want to make sure that you're prepared to spend long amounts of time out in the snow and out in the cold. You're going to want to have layered clothing. You're going to want to have some good headgear, gloves, proper footwear and socks, face protection, and if you can't carry it, you want to make sure that you have a cache in place in a safe location so that you can get to those caches and not have to carry all that gear with you. If you missed the podcast a couple weeks ago that Justin presented on caches, you may want to go back and listen to those. He had some great ideas on where and how to do a cache, whether you're doing a small cache that you're burying somewhere or you're doing something like a storage location. But you want to make sure that you've got caches in place so that you're not having to carry all that extra equipment during the winter months. You're also going to need to take in consideration that you're going to need to sleep eventually. So you want to make sure that you've got some good sleeping gear, and you want to make sure that it's adequate, because you may not have the convenience of a building or somewhere that you can build a fire. Especially at night, you may not want to build a fire for security purposes. So you want to make sure that you've got plenty of gear and you've got the right kind of gear for winter weather. You also want to keep in mind that cold weather can affect everything from your radio equipment, your batteries, your weapons. Your gear's all going to fog up. Your glasses and lenses are going to fog up. So you need to keep all of that in mind as well. If your equipment or gear has a weakness to the cold's going to find it. Your water canteens are going to freeze unless you have some way to warm them, keep them warm. You can stick them against your body in a sleeping bag or under your coat to keep them from freezing. You also want to avoid sitting on the ground unless you have some type of a layer between you and the ground. You're actually going to lose heat from your body to the ground through conduction or a heat transfer. So you want to lay on something, whether you're laying on branches or boughs from a tree. Keep yourself up off the snow, up off the ground. That's how you're going to end up hypothermic if you're not insulated. So as I said, we're going to be doing a four-part series. Next, we're going to talk about weather-related emergencies and cold exposure, and then we're going to talk about how we need to prepare for the holidays. So until next time, everybody stay safe, do your due diligence and continue to research, and always be prepared. Have a great week.
And that was Average Joe and his tip for the week. Okay, I want to talk to you about this article I found. It's by Mike Adams. It was originally published at naturalnews.com. I found it on shtfplan.com. Now, this is the editor's comment, and we're going to get right into it, because this has become a more and more of an issue, or not an issue, a concern. So the editor's comment is, take a look at the possibilities. Trump could win the popular vote, but lose badly in the Electoral College or the official vote tally. For popular and electoral could be called for Hillary. Trump might even win the Electoral College, maybe. Either way, either which way this thing goes, there are going to be millions and millions of angry voters in this country, and there's no sense of normalcy at all. Things are at a fever pitch, and the country is at a revolutionary point. There is a usurper at work stealing the election, or so it appears. And there is every chance that patriotic Americans aren't going to stand for it. Whether they remain peaceful or not, there very well could be a clash with the police state, the establishment, and their loyal media cohorts. Things could get very ugly in this country, and the constitutional republic may be well past the point of resuscitation. If there is violence, it may be staged, but either way, this could be the kickoff point from which we can never return. Then again, there's always a chance that life will go on, not too much differently than it always has. But that seems to be a very low chance. So what do you think will happen? Analysis. Election outcomes. Hold a minute, caller. I'll get to you in a second. Hey, caller, go ahead. Give me a minute or two as we get through this.
No problem.
All right. For the analysis, the election outcome scenarios reveal a 95% chance of a widespread post-election violence. Streets of America to run red with blood. This is by Mike Adams. My analysis of possible outcomes for the upcoming presidential election reveals that America only has a 5% chance of remaining peaceful after November 8th. This does not mean the violence will occur on November 9th, but rather that events will be set into motion on that day, which will lead to an escalation of violence. Here are the scenarios I see unfolding, all based on the best available information right now. Scenario number one, Trump wins a popular vote. There are three sub-scenarios under this outcome. Scenario 1A, 10% chance. Trump wins popular vote, but Democrats steal the electoral vote to claim victory, overriding the voters. Even though Donald Trump wins the popular vote, the Democrats have bribed enough Electoral College representatives to sway the vote to Clinton, even in contradiction to their own state's voters. Should this occur, expect mass protest, violence, bloodshed, and many legal challenges in those states with Electoral College votes do not reflect the popular vote. There is no question that the Trump-supporting citizens of America will not accept a rigged election outcome where the Electoral College votes are essentially stolen from the people. This would very quickly escalate into armed citizens marching in the streets and occupying key government buildings in an armed revolution against corruption. Scenario 1B, this is a 60% chance. Obama declares Trump victory invalid, claiming the Russians hacked the vote. In my analysis, this is the most likely outcome of the upcoming election, and the Democrats have been planting this narrative in advance with ridiculous claims that the Russians are running WikiLeaks and that Trump is a Putin puppet, direct claim from Hillary Clinton in the third debate. The purpose of all this is to create the narrative where a Trump victory can be declared invalid by Obama. Despite all the talk among Democrats about how much they love and respect democracy, the simple truth is they deeply hate it and don't trust it. There's almost no chance that Obama and the Clintons will voluntarily cede power to Donald Trump. If Obama declares a Trump victory invalid, all hell breaks loose across the nation, with leftists going full terrorism and patriots taking up arms to defend democracy against the anti-American traitors in Washington, D.C. Scenario 1C, a 5% chance. Democrats accept the Trump victory and agree to peacefully transition power. Now, even if Obama and the Clintons admit defeat and agree that Donald Trump is the next president, the liberal voters go nuts and begin firebombing buildings all across America. You'll see mass riots breaking out everywhere. Obama can then use this to declare martial law and, if he wishes, postpone the transfer of power to Donald Trump or blame him for all the violence, of course. Remember, the Democrats were already running mass staged violence across America. ProjectVeritasAction.com, you see all the videos there. They can easily stage riots, arson, bombings, and much more in order to maximize chaos in the streets. Now, scenario number two, Clinton wins the popular vote. Based on current information and considering just how much the official polls are completely rigged by deliberately oversampling Democrats, in my analysis, there is only a 25% total chance that Hillary Clinton wins a popular vote. Here are the sub-scenarios under that 25%. Now, scenario 2A, 20% chance. Clinton wins the reported vote, but Trump challenges the validity of the election results. Now, this scenario very likely starts with legal challenges to the mass election fraud, but could quickly escalate to a military coup or an armed citizens revolt where outraged Americans literally march to Washington and depose the corrupt regime in power. Expect huge bloodshed in this scenario. There is no question that roughly half of America simply cannot and will not accept Hillary Clinton as their predator. She is too corrupt, too evil, and too dangerous to maintain the consent of the governed. Hillary Clinton is a serial criminal who must be indicted and imprisoned if America is to remain anything resembling a legitimate nation that respects law. Now, thanks to WikiLeaks and Project Veritas, everyone with a working brain now knows that Democrats are hopelessly corrupt and deeply invested in widespread voter fraud to steal the White House. Scenario 2B, a 5% chance. Now, Trump accepts the election results and tells supporters to get behind Hillary. If Clinton wins and Trump admits she won fair and square, which seems very unlikely, he could publicly call for everyone to back down and accept the Clinton presidency. I see the chance of this is about only 5%. And even then, so many conservatives and patriots are going to be so angry at this outcome that they may decide to stage their own peaceful protest. A 95% chance of mass violence in one form or another. The upshot of all this is I see only 5% chance of a peaceful, nonviolent outcome to this election. In most conceivable scenarios, America descends into mass violence of one form or another. This is a direct result of the extreme polarization of political beliefs in America today, where we have an entire class of illiterate, ignorant Hillary Clinton supporters who only watch CNN and have no idea whatsoever that the Clintons are corrupt criminals. Witness the death of the Democrats' corruption in this Project Veritas Part 3 is just released today. On the other side, we have an informed, awake America who understand how this election is their very last chance to restore democracy by voting against the corrupt establishment. Now, these two groups cannot reason with each other. They cannot compromise, and frankly, it can't even reason with Democrats anymore because they're so propagandized and brain damaged that they have utterly abandoned the very concept of facts. To them, a fact is anything Hillary Clinton says, while a lie is anything Donald Trump says. We are so far beyond the realm of reason that Democrats are now essentially running America like a massive political cult steeped in delusion and mental illness. Now, believing in the lies of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton has very nearly become a psychiatric disorder, and their ideas are rooted in such lunacy that only a mentally ill person could possibly believe them or vote for them. So in essence, this vote on November 8th is not merely a vote to find out whether America will reject the insane corruption of Hillary Clinton. It's also a vote to find out whether the American people have collectively lost their minds. Now, if Clinton wins, it means we will all find ourselves living in a society of mentally ill zombies and cultists who are a danger to everyone, including themselves. The global debt collapse will be initiated no matter who wins. Importantly, no matter who wins, the global debt collapse is imminent, which means the entire scam of big government, endless growth, and high entitlement payouts is going to come to a catastrophic end. And that's mathematically guaranteed to unfold no matter who wins the presidency. So make sure you understand that if Donald Trump wins, takes office, the central bankers of the world will deliberately crash the system so that Donald Trump can be blamed for everything. Now, I've even published an entire video detailing this. Okay. The article is written by Mike Adams and originally published at naturalnews.com if you want to read it for yourself. Go ahead, caller. How are you?
Hey, John. Foil hat soldier here at your service with all attendant disclaimers.
Have you had your teeth pulled so that way you can know the government's not tracking you?
Oh, no, I just put on another layer of foil.
All right, sir. It's been a long time since I heard from you. Everything's okay, yes?
Oh, yeah, as good as they're going to get, I suppose. You know me. Yeah, no tragedies and nothing to write home about. So, like I always say, if my choices are boredom versus chaos, I'll take boredom every time.
Nah, chaos is fun.
Well, control chaos. I can never seem to control it is the problem. So
no one
gets me in trouble.
Apparently not a lot of other people can either.
Yeah, there's that.
So, what's going on in your world, my friend?
Oh, let's see. I attended a very interesting little meeting on Monday evening. And
yes.
I don't know if I should go into it here or not because it's more to the political side than it is to the prepping side. But I found it extraordinarily interesting nonetheless.
Fire away.
And it was actually good news. Good. It brings good news. I don't get to do that very often. I sat in with a meeting of some people that some of the organizers with the Article 5 Constitution of States movement.
Yes, sir.
And it was enlightening, it was informative, and I'm happy to say that Illinois, otherwise known as the deep blue state of the Midwest, is actually well ahead of any other predominantly Democratic state in the nation of getting the state to pursue to join to the movement, I guess, on a national level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bipartisan effort. They've got both Democrat and Republican support for petitioning the state to, or petitioning the Congress to declare a constitution of the states.
A constitutional convention of the states. Very nice.
So the great thing about it is it kind of mitigates whatever chaos that should ensue following this election, and there will be chaos.
Oh, there will be.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me.
What kind and how much, but that's the only other question.
Thank you for reminding me. November 7th is Stock Up on Ammunition Day.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah.
I stopped in the little shop today, and they had a 50 caliber BMG on display for sale. I thought, well, I guess that would be good for stopping something. A lot of things.
Oh, my Lord, imagine so.
I can't imagine it would take two people to carry it, but
not exactly
concealed carry material, shall we say.
But I did know a guy when I was in the Army, and he was able to carry it and set it up by himself.
Hmm.
He was a big boy, too, let me tell you.
I'm going to see you. I would think you would have to be, because I'm looking at the size of that thing. Wow, I can't imagine firing that.
Oh, when he got to firing it, he could hold it down so it wouldn't be bouncing everywhere. Even with the sandbags on, he was able to control it very well.
Hmm.
All 130
pounds. Out, make sure I'm on his side.
No. That was his baby. No one was allowed to touch it. He loved it. He claimed it. That was his. And he's welcome to it, because all 130 pounds of me was having all I could do to carry the M60. Now, I don't know how a skinny guy like myself at that time got stuck carrying the M60. It's like, come on. I was able to.
That's a lot for one guy to carry, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are those things? What do those things weigh?
I don't remember. I just remember it was heavy as hell. I said, come on, guys.
That's all that mattered.
So I finally bitched enough. They finally changed my designation from machine gunner to grenadier. And I love that M2. I love that M203. That was my favorite weapon. I think it was because.
Launcher?
Yeah, the grenade launcher.
Okay.
40-millimeter grenade. What I did like about it, though, I still loved it, is that the round came out slow enough that you could actually bore sight it. It was beautiful. And you came out slow and just watched the round. You could just watch the round just go from your weapon to the end of the muzzle to right down range. It was a beautiful thing. God, I love that thing. loved it. That was my
almost
big
like,
thing.
It could have done Facebook selfies of itself as it traveled across the range.
You know what? It probably could have. It probably could have, my friend. It probably could have. I love that thing. Oh, M203, sign me up. I'm serious.
Yeah,
man.
definitely good things to be on the sending end, not the receiving end.
Oh, yeah. I just remember watching that. I love that thing. But, man, I remember hauling that M60. It's like, come on, really? And then, of course, they had me carrying not only a box, not only the weapon, but, the ammunition box and what else they had me carrying? Oh, yeah, two or three bandoliers of ammunition.
Oh, those
are like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, come on, man. I can barely run. But I just decided, oh, the hell with this. Yeah, that
sounds
like
a little too much of a good thing right there.
It was like, oh, come on, guys. But, I was the young punk on the squad, so I got punked for a bit. And then, thank God, about 6 months later, so some of the new kids came in from basic and AIT training. Here, this is yours. You get to have it.
Yeah.
And they're much bigger than I was. It's like, here, you can definitely handle this.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like, I'll take the grenade launcher. Thank you very much. So, but anyways, enough reminiscing back to the Reagan military. But,
enough for the good old days. Right?
Oh, God. You know, I'm almost at the point, I'm at the point where I'm so sick and tired of the politics already. I'm thinking maybe, and I think it was Julian Vasquez down in Australia told me that their election cycle is only allowed to run for 6 months. That's it. If you can't make your case for being prime minister or whatever in 6 months, you never will be. So this is going on 15 months now. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's way insane the way we.
God.
You finish one election, you stop for a sandwich and you start the next campaign.
And it's true.
This is this is just, it's out of control the way we're doing it here. It's like there's, and I think that contributes to the fact that all the, you know, the primary concern of every elected official is their reelection campaign.
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the House of Representatives. Every 2 years, they got to be reelected. They got to go for reelection again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not saying the Constitution's wrong, but come on. This is why we need to have term limits.
mm-hmm.
Plus, they all have to have.
Are...
Plus, you know, they also have to have the pleasure of coming out and living with the laws they pass. They just can't hide themselves in Congress and exempt themselves, which is what they're not supposed to do, but they do anyways. So I've had it with it.
Those two issues right there, those are two of the primary issues that this whole Article 5 thing is pushing.
Oh, no, I've been following it.
Oh, have you? Great, cool.
Oh, I've been following it. I've signed petitions and everything else for it. Because I think it's, first of all, the political class was never meant to be a full-time job, ever.
Exactly. Yeah, in fact, you didn't have career politicians until long after the Revolution, if I understand it. I don't know when it started.
Right, because you know, at the beginning, most of them were all farmers, landowners,
mm-hmm.
and they, you know, you come in, you do your thing, and go back to your farm and do whatever it is you do.
Yeah.
And now, that's an interesting thing. I wonder if one of our listeners would happen to know about that. When did it become the full-time politician? This is my full-time job. Well, let me tell you, your full-time job sucks. We don't like it.
Yeah.
So there.
Yeah, you're full. You know what? We need to put these guys. If not fire them outright, we need to put them on.
They need to be on the unemployment line. They need to be on the unemployment line. Maybe if most of them started hitting the unemployment line, they'd fix some of the problems here.
Well, yeah.
And no more of this congressional retirement program. No.
Mm-hmm.
You get
mm-hmm.
to join the rest of us on Social Security. There's a whole bunch of issues that can be solved real fast with term limits. You know?
Yeah,
so,
you get to share our Social Security and you get to share our Obamacare.
Yeah, you get to participate in. If you think Obamacare is so great, you get to participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you right now, I dumped my county insurance. That they were charging me $800 a month. I had to pay full freight. So I went to the healthcare.gov and I found it for $100 less the first year, found it for $150 less the second year, and the health insurance company I signed up for, Land of Lincoln, they're
mm-hmm.
out of business. Out of business as of October 1st, I had to go get to Humana. So I'm not with Humana now, and I looked at the I think it's like Humana, and was it Blue Cross Blue Shield or nothing left, you know, and it's not, and their rate, the premiums have gone up, and once again, the insurance commissioner here in the People's Democratic Republic of Illinois have done nothing. They said, okay, whatever you guys want. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's pathetic. The corruption in the state government here is just beyond belief. Regardless.
I remember hearing that in the state of Illinois that the insurance lobby is the largest lobby in the state because you know we've got so many big insurers headquartered here in the state. So
I believe it.
Should be surprised.
I believe it. Yep. You know, as a prepper, you know, especially here in Illinois and some of the other democratically controlled states, it's so expensive to live in those states. People can't even get ahead anymore.
No.
To be retired in Illinois, your best is to get the hell out of the state. It's
mm-hmm.
that terrible. What the? Oh, you know what? I'll catch it Sunday. I had an email from a listener, and he was talking about, you know, one of the ways that the government can control the people is to control the food supply. And
mm-hmm.
we know that this administration has flushed fresh water into the Pacific Ocean, have destroyed crops intentionally, banned the use of water from some of the farms so that way they cannot mm-hmm. produce the crops that they normally have produced. It's just ridiculous. And I thought, well, you can go further. In fact, it was Jason in Oregon. He's the one that sent me the email. And I thought, I said, you know what? You could add healthcare to that.
Oh,
government
yeah.
controls healthcare.
Absolutely.
You can control the masses. So, yeah,
disarm everybody, control the food supply, and control the healthcare, and
pretty much control the population.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
we could even throw in the get into the foil hat theory about cashless society and all that, but you don't even need to go that far. You don't even need to go that far if you control the food and the medical, and you control everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Oh well, what are you going to do? We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
I liked that article that I was talking about from naturalnews.com, and he's talking about these percentages of what, the different scenarios of what could happen. I did not think, I've seen some of this stuff on Facebook and stuff and emails about, Obama's going to declare martial law. I think, how can he declare martial law? And then when I read that, I thought, I didn't think of it that way. Just saying that Trump's election is invalidated. And as such, before I transition to power, I'm going to stay in here until I can determine whether or not it was a fair and accurate election. That will send people into the streets.
Yeah.
And then it poses a problem for the U.S. military. Because which commander?
Yeah, I guess it would, wouldn't it?
It could. I mean, the argument could be made that, Trump may have won the election, but he hasn't been sworn in, so he's really not commander-in-chief. And you can make the opposite argument also. So it would be up to the regiment commanders, the battalion commanders, about, how they are going to do it. Because I'm sure these guys have talked about it forever.
Yeah.
So that's how I thought, okay, that could it happen? It could happen. My guess, though, and I think a lot of people are going to be pissed off come November 9th or November 8th at 10:30 at night. People are going to be pissed off. The question is how pissed off. Given the American citizens' penchant for short-term memory, because they barely remember anything as it is anyways.
Yeah.
They may just say okay, and just live with it. Where was that? I'm glad you called because you got me hooked on this thing now. Where is it? I want to read this quote I found. And I did post it on the CRN Facebook page. Here it is. This is from the 3%. And this is interesting. I like this. It says, when fence sitting will no longer be possible, you will either stand with the resistance or take a knee and willingly accept the yoke of tyranny and oppression.
Yeah, and
I know.
I wonder, it's such an insipid thing. Will anybody notice that it's happening? Or does, so if you notice that it's happening now, kind of makes you wonder, is anybody going to pay any more attention?
I think right now people are pretty much set how they're going to vote. Now, I've seen a couple people on the various news programs say, haven't made up my mind yet. And my response is, that's because you haven't been paying attention and you are a rock and should not be allowed to vote at all.
Well, yeah, if they haven't made up their mind, it's because they don't have one, I have to believe.
How can you not know? How can you not have figured something out by now? So, don't forget, too, with it was very it was Reagan was behind was it Mondale? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mondale?
84.
Yeah. He was behind him by double digits at this point. So, I don't know what's gonna happen. And the more I think about that article, I'm thinking, many, many things could happen. And it depends on how the American people are going to accept it, if they're going to accept it.
I expect to see a lot of people doing a slow burn. There's going to be a lot of whoever. Everybody's going to be angry. Somebody's going to be angry. A large number of people.
Right.
And basically you'll just see this simmer until probably Thanksgiving weekend. And then Thanksgiving evening, all the law enforcement agencies in the country will see an unprecedented amount of calls for domestic disturbances as all the families get a little too much wine in them, and everybody starts arguing over the Thanksgiving.
Happens every year.
And it'll be unprecedented this year.
Oh, let me talk.
Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. True story.
Yeah, those have got to be nightmares.
Okay, true story. True story. One year, I decide, you know what? I'll work the day after Christmas. I'm going to go to bond court. I'll get some overtime. Work bond court for a few hours that day.
Mm-hmm.
Young man was in there, and he was in there for domestic battery because on Christmas morning, he decided to batter his girlfriend, the mother of his child, because she did not get him a PlayStation. This is the mentality we're dealing with, people.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you didn't get a toy from your girlfriend and you beat her? Are you, you're a moron. And the judge agreed and said, you get bond. When you can get money, you can get out. Until that time, you're staying here for a while. Because apparently you're too irresponsible to be out in public. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's one of those stories where you look at it and go, yeah, that's shocking, but it's just not surprising anymore.
It's not surprising. That's the problem. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. Anyways. Hey, Justin's in the chat room. Have to say hi to him. Hi, Justin. Did you get your thank you package for your monthly donation support? There. Send it out. I'm sure. If he hasn't got it by now, he'll get it for sure next week. But just wanted to find out. I see guest 2860 is in the chat room. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're listening. I wonder if that might be Mike Norris. That might be Mike Norris. I don't know. Anyways. Redflag.com. That's at redflagnews.com. The United Kingdom sends tanks, drones, and 800 soldiers to the Russian border. Now, right now, you're all asking yourselves, how does an island nation have a border with Russia? Well, I'm going to tell you. The show of force, this is from today, just so you all know, from Joey Miller at the Express in the UK. The show of force comes just days after the Russian leader's fleet passed near the British coast. British soldiers will travel to Estonia, and was one of the biggest buildups of foreign firepower on Russia's border since the Cold War. The move will take place next spring, with Denmark and France also taking part in the huge military exercise. The project was revealed by Defense Secretary Michael Fallon, who said the UK's forces will be fully combat capable. He said that battalion will be defensive in nature, but it will be fully combat capable. This is about two things: reassurance, and that needs to be done with some formidable presence and deterrence. This is simply not a tripwire. This is a serious military presence. What are you thinking now, people, huh? This doesn't get you going. The Cold War-style tensions between Moscow and Russia and Washington. What the hell is that? Wow, that was odd. My computer has started assaulting me with serious music. It scared me, so I turned off that page. Scary.
Yeah, let me call you back, and then I gotta disappear for a moment.
Go ahead, sir. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Mr. Kevins will be right back in a few minutes. What were we talking about? Sorry. So, anyways, it looks like the Brits have had it. So let me see. France and Denmark are also sending soldiers. And the UK is sending, now they say it's defensive in nature, but fully combat capable. What does that tell you? I don't know. Draw your own conclusions. Meanwhile, here in America, the media is absolutely glued to Donald Trump, whether he's a sexual predator or not. We don't care about anything else. All we care about is electing Hillary. Oh, God, is it ever end? Okay, prepper stuff. You know, one thing you have to know about being a prepper is this, and especially if you're new preppers, I want you to understand something, and it is this. Just because you prep does not necessarily mean you will survive a critical incident. It could be due to a number of things. For example, the critical incident may happen a block from your house and you get caught up in it and you are no longer among the living. What prepping does ensure is this. One, if you do survive an initial critical incident, you have some food, water, and some basic supplies to perhaps survive. If you don't, perhaps your family will. Now, many people say, well, why are you prepping? Well, because I realize that I might not survive a critical incident. I might be somewhere away from home where I can't get to my supplies. I might be too far away or whatever. I might just die outright. But my family will have access to those supplies. My family will know, hopefully, what to do with those supplies. And to be sure they know what they do, not only do I talk to them about it, but I've made up a little, not a manual, but enough paper work for instructions on how to do things. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. Leave it behind. Show them where it's at. Say, if you forget, here is a manual I made for you. It will tell you what you had. It will contain an inventory of your supplies. It will tell you, if necessary, how to use it. All the important things. You may not be around to explain it to them. Does it make sense? Am I saying that just because you're a prepper, you will die from a critical incident? No. I'm saying you may not survive it depending on variables which are too numerous to actually go into. I just gave a quick example. Whether it's from economic collapse, societal collapse, a pandemic, or a nuclear incident, or an EMP where it results in a grid down situation. You know, there are so many, and let's face it, if we're going to be subject to any of those things, whether it's an induced man-made problem or a natural problem like a tornado or a hurricane or whatever, earthquake, volcano if you're in the right area, we don't know when it's going to happen. Our enemies do not give us forewarning of what they are planning to do. Now, they'll say, yes, we are going to do this, but we're not going to tell you when. Unlike this administration, which has a nasty, stupid habit of telegraphing its punches every time, and then they wonder why things don't work out. Well, duh. Don't telegraph your punches. Don't be stupid. But that's beyond me. So anyways, that's why you prep. You don't just prep for yourself. You prep for your family. Got it? Not hard. All right, what else? What else did I want to tell you about? Contra crew, keep on. Please, keep on going with your preps. You should have had water. If you're new to Contra crew, you don't know what I'm talking about, this is what we did. Who was it? Somebody called in and said, you know what, you should have something called Contra Crew where you tell the new preppers, you know, get them started on certain things. Look, if, you know, there's no, what's the word I'm thinking? There's no membership card or club card or anything like that. Either you is or you is not prepping. Now, many of you are armchair preppers. I know you are. I've talked to a few of you. Being an armchair prepper doesn't get it done. You can say, well, gee, I wish I prepped some. Well, that's fine, too. You know, you can wish all you want. Wishing ain't going to get it done. Wishing is not going to help you survive. Just not going to happen. All right. So getting back to the Contra crew. You know, we started, I think, early summer? And the first thing was, water. Start getting and storing water for long term. I like 30-year water. It's out there. Where did I get it? I haven't had to buy a lot of it lately. Let me think where it was. SimplerLife.com has 30-year water. You get 6 cans to the case. It's like $30 for the case. They haven't shipped from California out here to the People's Democratic Republic of Illinois. And it was like $30, so it's like 30 cents for a can or whatever. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was 30 cents for a year because the water will stay in the cans for 30 years. Good stuff. Easy, right? There are other water supplies you can get. You can get the Aqua Blocks. You could, if you wish, get yourself a water filter. If you happen to live like I do near the chain of lakes, do we go swimming in the chain of lakes? Well, only when we're intoxicated and we fall in. But there's other issues too. But the bottom line is this. It's water. You can be filtered. You can drink it if you have the correct filter. There's a couple filters out there. Berkey is one. Berkey is one that everybody seems to have and everyone seems to like. A little bit expensive, but it's well worth it. All right. And then we talked about, for Contra Crew, start getting your food. Now, we went over the thing where, you know, all the on the can, there's an expiration date or a goodbye date. You know what? That's bull. As long as the can is still sealed, it is good. Now, that's not to say that after time, some of the food will maybe become discolored or maybe lose some of its nutritional value. It will. But the fact is, it's a lot cheaper than buying long-term dehydrated food, which, by the way, you need to buy also. But my point is, if you plan on bugging in, there's nothing wrong with having canned food and putting it on the shelf. All right. Should you rotate your stock? Yes. Does everybody do it? No. Don't let them fool you. Not everybody does it like they should. It just doesn't happen. All right. Now, with the long-term dehydrated food. What's the one thing you need for dehydrated food to make it edible? Either saliva or water. Water, you know, you're going to have to determine how much you want to, you know, store, how much you want to save versus how much you want to put towards food preparation. Oh, and that reminds me, canned vegetables, wonderful stuff. You know why? Because the canned vegetables are packed in what? Water. Sometimes it's even salted water. You look at the ingredients on the can of corn, it may say ingredients are corn, water, and salt. Well, that means you can now drink. You may not, and it may not be the, you know, what you want it to, you know, corn-flavored water, but you won't dehydrate if you drink it. It won't hurt you. It won't kill you. And if you've been stressed out, you're going to need some of that salt to help replace the electrolytes you've lost from the stress and effort you've been going through if you happen to bug out or just, you know, trying to bug in and staying alive. So there's actually, you know, when you use the canned vegetables, it's got a twofold purpose. Just something to think about. All right. And then the last part for the Contra Crew, we were talking about, start getting your basic medical stuff together. Bandages, alcohol, peroxide. I would even go, and I have, I've gone and found Pakistani steel surgical instruments. 105-piece kit. Very cheap. You can get it. I would, there's iodine tincture you need to get and some other stuff. But I'm going to leave that up to the ladies of the watch. Let Julie, because Julie being a registered nurse, she could give you a much better comprehensive list than I could of what you should have. Because, and don't waste your money buying the first aid kit at whatever. You need to have a full-blown military-type first aid kit, medical kit. I even hate to use the word first aid because somebody will run to Ace Hardware and buy this, the 10,000-piece first aid kit, and it's got 12 million band-aids in there, different sizes. Well, it ain't going to do you nothing. You're going to have catgut so you can do stitches, stitch removal, staples, however you're going to do it. You're going to need that stuff, guys. You're going to need ibuprofen or Tylenol or whatever. You're going to need it. You're going to need omeprazole or lamiprazole or Nexium because people are going to be puking blood with the stress that comes out. I mean, if you don't have heartburn now, by God, you will when it's after the first 3 hours and you realize what the hell's happening and your world's collapsing around you. And contracrudicity, you know, after we get done with during the first aid, we're going to start collecting borrowing items. That'll be sometime in after the first of the year. Well, and we're going to discuss what will be some good bartering items. All right? Because let's face it, you start seeing some of the, I'll cover it then. I don't want to get too much into it, get ahead of ourselves. But regardless, that's what I'm talking about. All right. So we've talked about that for the contra crew, new people. And, you know, it's here. Now, there have been a couple of people that have emailed me at contraradio@live.com, contraradio@live.com. Some of them, you know, and I'm not going to use their names. I won't embarrass them. And not only that, but I'm not going to give out their personal information about it. But I will say this about some of these people. Some people, preppers, are prepping, and they've got large families. And I don't mean extended families. I mean large, immediate families. Like they have, you know, their wife and 4 or 5 kids, you know, and they're working. They're prepping. Now, unless you win the lottery, you're not going to be able to get everything you need in one fell swoop. You're going to have to do it a bit at a time because you got budgets. You got bills to pay every month. I get that. Most preppers, that's the way they do it, a little bit at a time. So don't overexert yourself. Don't overextend yourself. Don't go over your budget. Stay within your budget. You know, a lot of times you'll see me post stuff like, survival-based foods. The first, I said, they sent me a week's worth of food for $10. And then every month after that, for like, it's like $49. They'll send me another week's worth of food. Buying time, leveraging your time. And you know what? Done deal. I've seen it. It looks like it'd be pretty good quality. I haven't had a chance to try it. Also, which one was it? Let me look it up real quick. I just put it on there today. This is pretty interesting. I know what you're all going to think. I know what you're all going to say, but I don't care. I want to tell you about it anyways. Oh, where'd it go? This is another one. WiseFoodStorage.com. Wise 72-hour emergency kit. It's half off. It's $20. $20 right now. Okay. It's got a 25-year shelf life. WiseFoodStorage.com. You can see it on the CRN Facebook page. What's the other one? Oh, where'd it go? No, not that. Not the nuke map. Not that. Safecastle.com. Safecastle.com. This is their final week of the huge Mountain House sale. It ends October 31st. Up to 50% off Mountain House 30-year food. But that's not it either. Where'd it go? Oh, I hate when this happens. Anyways. That's not it. Where'd it go? I hate when stuff disappears. You know it's there. You know you put it there. And then now you can't find it when you need it. Damn it. I hate when that happens. Found it. Okay. Where was it? I don't know where it... Damn it. Oh, here it is. CampingSurvival.com. CampingSurvival.com. Patterson's Chipped Beef Gravy, 8-ounce can. It's on sale for $1.64. Chipped Beef Gravy. You're probably thinking, well, I don't like it. Let me tell you, when you're starving, you're going to love this stuff. You're going to think it's like the feast that you've been missing your entire life. So, yeah, that's important. That's important stuff. Okay, that's all I got to say for this episode of Roundtable Report. My thanks to Kevin for checking in. I appreciate it. Again, our wishes and prayers for fast get well soon, fast healing for Mike Norris. Appreciate it, buddy, for listening in. No, God got your back on this one. All right, we'll be back Saturday night for Julie's show, Ladies of the Watch, at 8 p.m. And I don't know, I have to get a hold of her. I haven't talked to her in a while. Usually I talk to her at least once a week. I haven't talked to her, but I have to get a hold of her. Okay, this is John Jeffers saying thank you for listening to the Contra Radio Network. To my prepper and patriot friends, I say to you this: be safe, be alert, and be vigilant, especially as we get closer to the election. I'm John Jeffers. Thank you again for listening. Good night.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.